on AM and FM. All your favorite programs and personalities with a cleaner, clearer signal and a larger nighttime coverage area. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? When you were it and you had bad traits, your gold was skimming in the golden rule. So why are you acting like a bloody fool? If you get hot, then you must get cool. Bad boys, bad.
And it is the Peace Officers Show today on the talk show. I've got a full contingent. I've got at least the three major departments that report in. We have Colin Letty across there, news director as well. We also have with us Jason Marlowe. He is, the information director. I'm not sure exactly, Jason, what is your official title, but it's your official public relations information.
Keep going, Steve. Yeah, it sounds good.
It's
better than what they usually call me, so I'll go with it.
And we also have Dennis Kramer's, Chief Dennis Kramer of the Burlington Police Department, Sergeant Kevin Glenn Denning from the Des Moines County Sheriff's Office, and the Sheriff of Des Moines County for the past 18 years, Mike Johnstone, all joining us today. We're talking about law enforcement. We're talking about issues. We're talking about crime. We're talking about driving. I did say one thing before I go into anything too serious. We were in Chicago. We drove into Chicago for a gathering about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, I guess it was. And the thing that we noticed is there was a lot of people, especially on 80, that just seemed to be riding in the left lane and not trying to pass, not trying to do anything, just sort of blocking off the road and in a long line of people getting up behind them. Jason, you'll let take this one to you. But as far as I know, in Illinois law is absolutely specific. You may not be in the left lane unless you are passing yet. Do we have the same law in Iowa?
We do not. It's one of the things I reckon that at some point we may discuss as a state if that's the way to go. Or, you know, mainly it's just to educate motorists the fact that being in the right-hand lane of a four-lane highway is the best place. It allows traffic to flow a little bit better. There are going to be some times when maybe you get stuck in that left-hand lane and overtaking or passing another vehicle. And I don't know how Illinois actually enforces that left-hand lane. Is it a distance? Is it a time amount? You'd have to talk to their authorities on how you enforce that. And it kind of goes to one of my philosophies is you can write all the laws that you want, but if they're unenforceable, what is the great benefit of it? You know.
Yeah.
So we encourage people to remain in that right-hand lane, kind of stay out of the way. And there's another thing that could potentially pop up is the fact that there are people that drive the wrong way on a four-lane highway. Even in the middle of the day in Iowa, on Highway 34, you occasionally see it. I saw somebody make a turn there at Sunnyside at Roosevelt the other day, and instead of coming to the southbound lanes, they actually turned into the northbound lanes. Fortunately, they were able to get turned around and make a U-turn. So that does happen from time to time. If you're wanting to avoid that head-on collision, if you're in that right-hand lane with a wrong-way driver, there's a little bit of a chance potentially for you to avoid that crash.
I think one of the things we noticed is that it tended to bring a lot of people, you know, it means that you've compressed an awful lot of cars and the following distance between those cars. They're now very much highly compressed as well. So if somebody, an accident there, or if somebody were to slam on the brakes or something were to happen, you'd have quite a few cars involved in a pileup. And I suppose that's because people are irritated. And I guess they're trying to bump, they're riding on somebody's bumper to try and get them to go move across there. And I guess, obviously common sense says you avoid that situation if you possibly can, right?
Yeah, one of those chain reaction type crashes. And, you know, I'm not a huge NASCAR fan anymore, but if you look at a NASCAR race on a super speedway, Talladega, Daytona, where the crashes happen 3, 4, 5 cars actually in front, the ones that often suffer are the ones behind that can't get stopped in time or that can't see. So similar things apply. Now, I am glad of the fact that Iowa traffic is typically not like Chicago traffic on a day-to-day basis. And we have a lot more wide open and rural driving in our state. So hopefully we can continue to make it work for everybody.
One of the studies I saw out, as long as you're still right there, and that is, I'll get I'd like to get everybody's opinion on this. It is that a study came out this week showing that texting while driving was equally or greater a danger than a drunk driver in terms of causing an accident. Mike, do you want to respond to that? If you would, I guess what texting and driving the study came out. It was, in fact, they said you're more likely to have an accident texting and driving than you are being a drunk driver. Not that you should be either one of those things.
Well, neither is good, that's for sure. But I would have to agree that is. I would not argue with those statistics at all. I mean, every day we see people running off the side of the road, not paying attention to what they're doing, going down the road, looking at their phones, and it is a real problem. And we've kind of, in this state, we did a feel-good law a couple of years ago, and that's all, that's what I call it, because that's all it was. The politicians got together and they thought it was a good idea, but it wasn't enough. We have to go to hands-free or something better than that. And because right now the law is basically unenforceable, and we don't really have a lot of tools to stop it. There are a lot of accidents that occur out there, a lot of close calls. And you as a bike rider would probably understand how important it is to keep your eyes on the road. And it is a huge distraction, and you'll see it every day. And I'm just amazed that more people aren't killed.
How many accidents do you think? Any idea how many accidents you go to that they were texting and driving? Can you determine if there was a text and drive accident?
Sometimes you can. Sometimes we'll go back and actually look at the severity of it depends a lot on it. But I know those text messages and all those things can be recovered. We do it all the time in criminal investigations, and we can determine if you were on the phone at the time of the accident. And if you're that could definitely add to the severity of the accident and the causation of the accident. Anytime you're distracted behind the wheel, be it eating a cheeseburger, doing your hair, on your radio, doing any of those things are all distractions. Then you add that next level of a phone in there, it just – your eyes are off the road anytime you're doing that. And I'll be the first one to admit I'm a lousy driver when I don't keep my eyes on the road.
Well, the other thing is, and I'll get Kevin Glendening to jump on this one. The fact is, newer cars, they have an entertainment system that is in there, that is in the center. It's got a center screen. Now, obviously it's nice to have the rear backup camera, but it's also got a lot of bells, whistles, and everything else like that, that you can utilize. It's going to take your eyes off of there. And even with Bluetooth, it's been said that even if you have the fact is once you take your mind off of driving, even just while talking, that if you're not concentrating on driving, you're not really fully behind the wheel, are you?
Yeah, your focus just needs to be on the road. I think vehicles have made a lot of advancements where you can have the hands free and you can be talking on your phone without actually being on your phone.
Because you connect the Bluetooth on through your system, yeah.
Send a text message without actually picking up your phone.
Right.
But your focus is turned away from the road, and to me, I think your focus should always be on the road. It's where your eyes should be and your focus, and that cognitive ability to always focus forward, look at what's going on around you. It's taken away when you're doing anything. Now, I think I'm much more in favor of the hands-free options than being on your phone. I think that's just very dangerous to be on your phone to take your eyes off the road. But even so, with doing that, your focus isn't where it should be.
Dennis, I think I've seen one thing that I've seen more often than not, and I know it's hard, but it's somebody you're sitting at a stop sign. Okay, I mean, I'm going to be behind the person, but we're sitting at a stop sign. And I know that the light, stopped. There's nobody moving, but somebody's texting. They're sending a message back to somebody. And I will tell you that I've been sitting at a stop sign and I've seen, a text. It'll pop up on my phone. And the temptation is to reach out and grab the phone. But you can't even look at a text. Is that right? Under Iowa law? Is that correct?
I believe so. You're not supposed to be actively texting while you're driving or on the roadway. The best thing to do in that case, I think, in most aspects, is to pull off a safe place. And if you have to see the text, is to to get off the roadway, park. And then
but if you're on if you're on a roadway and you're at a stop sign, there's no difference in than that than if you're on the road driving along, is it?
That is correct. I mean, I've seen I've been behind some of those drivers that are looking down at their phone, and then the light turns green, and you sit and you wait and you wait and you wait. And
you know that somebody's
something's going on in there.
They're moving their fingers on something or whatever.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. And then somebody behind them will honk, and then of course wave at them and
enforcing that. I mean, do you have a record of tickets that have been given out for doing that, or is that something that's a hard thing to come up with?
I think the sheriff said it best. It's a feel good law. There's not a lot of teeth in it, and it's a very difficult thing to prosecute. And to write those tickets for us.
All right, Jason Marlowe, we'll get you on here because that's probably the obviously there's you're on an interstate right now. You've got look at the cars out there now. They have lane control on them. You've got it's not the old just cruise control anymore. You got cruise control and lane control. The more bells and whistles you have, sometimes the more it just makes you tempted to just simply pretend that your car is almost self-driving. It's not maybe not self-driving, but you've got a lot more, I guess, a lot more things to less quote unquote worry about. If you don't have to have your hands on the wheel, that's kind of scary too, isn't it?
Yeah, some of the new vehicles and the comfort factors that everybody wants when they buy a new car, with that lane departure, integrated cruise control, kind of trending towards
it'll
that.
Slow you down if you
that's
get
right.
up too close to somebody, speed you up if they're away.
Yep, that's the integrated cruise control factor, and we're kind of trending towards that driverless car era. It's going to happen. Now, there will be some that say, I don't want a car that drives itself. I enjoy driving. They didn't grow up with that. But I look at it as a father of three teenage drivers right now, and the fact that their mindset for driving a car is much different than when I was their age. I enjoyed that. It was a form of some independence, some opportunities to go and do some things by myself. My kids still want to go places. They just want to be taken there. And I think when you look at that as a driving factor, more and more technology aspects. Some would argue with self-driving cars in the future, maybe the actual amount of crashes will go down, because we're relying on that machine to do the work. We know that the vast majority of crashes that happen this day and age are probably operator error. There are people that are making mistakes when driving. So, we'll see how the future plays out, but I think it will be a factor.
Let's get the millennial point of view. I mean, is it different for a millennial generation than it is for the old folks that are in this room?
I think it is a bit different, not much, because we do see that texting and driving and really just using your phone in general, even for things like social media, is a very, very large problem going on. And I was brought up in the era where this was just becoming the biggest thing in the world. And so it was constantly beat into our heads that this was a bad idea, yet still people do it. I'm one of the people who don't understand. And you said self-driving cars, and we're seeing those being put in production right now with Teslas having a self-drive mode. But granted, that self-driving mode only goes up to a certain speed on a highway. But that has an integrated control where you can still take over. And I think that is going to become the big norm and the driving force, pun not intended, behind more modern travel.
All right, lots of changes going on. We're going to talk about, there's something coming up on Tuesday. It's an active shooter drill that's going to be taking place at the Des Moines County, at the Des Moines County Courthouse. But we're going to talk a little bit about firearms and respect for firearms. And we've had a number of shootings that have occurred, and just respect for the power of a gun. We'll talk about that and more. We're going to take a break right now. Peace officers are with us, 754-1490. You are welcome to give us a call, 754-1490. We shall return.
The will to win is not nearly as important as the will to prepare to win. We live for preparation, and we prepare to be the best that we can be for this game.
Pick six to start the game. Touchdown, Iowa.
The Hawks travel to Michigan with pregame Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Brought to you by Casebine Community Credit Union, the Boogaloo and Fun City at Pizzazz, Barn Grover Glass, and by Courtesy Door on News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
Connecting with like-minded people at the Greater Burlington Leadership Development Conference, Wednesday, October 23rd from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Burlington Golf Club. The Dale Carnegie keynote speaker, Michelle Gonida, will speak on how embracing artificial intelligence will help you be successful in the workplace. Following the keynote, breakout sessions will be held, focusing on going above and beyond to give your customer a great experience, along with opportunities to build your network. The Leadership Conference is open to all who would like to attend. For more information or to register, visit greaterburlington.com today. Sharpen your skills and join us for the Greater Burlington Leadership Development Conference, Wednesday, October 23rd from 1 to 5 p.m. Brought to you by Greater Burlington Leadership, empowering great leaders for today and tomorrow. A program of the Chamber of Commerce, a division of the Greater Burlington Partnership, making connections, building community.
Flowers are beautiful, but they become even more so when carried by people who are committed to ending Alzheimer's. At the Alzheimer's Association Walk to End Alzheimer's, hundreds of thousands carry different colored flowers, signifying their connections to the disease. And we walk so that one day, there will be a white flower for Alzheimer's first survivor.
Join the Walk to End Alzheimer's Saturday, October 12th at the Port of Burlington. Registration starting at 9, walk at 11. For more information, go to alz.org/Iowa.
And welcome back. It is the Peace Officer Show today. We've got with us the Sheriff of Des Moines County. He's Mike Johnstone. We've got Sergeant Kevin Glendenning from the Des Moines County Sheriff's Office, the Chief of the Burlington Police Department, Dennis Kramer. We also have Jason Marlowe. He is the Information Director and Public Relations Director for this quadrant of the state of Iowa for the Iowa State Patrol. At least I've given him that title for right now. And we're getting comments on things that are going on. We've had a number of shooting incidents that have occurred. Some of them, just absolutely silly and stupid and all of the other things that you might have go into there. But the reality is, Mike and I were talking a little before the show that is there a different have we raised a different group? Is there a different respect for firearms right now than there used to be? Firearms is used as self-defense or protect yourself, but it seems that there's a lot of weapons that are out there that people simply pack in their pants or pack in their maybe put behind their back and use it as an intimidator. I don't know. What do you? It's a different world right now than when I asked Mike Johnstone the question about maybe 10 or 15 years ago. I remember when I asked you, I said you got to if you got a call out, okay, PD or sheriff's office, please go to we got a fight in progress going on at such and such a place. Well, that fight in progress is usually a fist fight. Maybe if it was at a bar, it might be somebody actually hitting somebody over the head with a pool cue or something. Now you don't know really for sure, but there's a reasonably good chance there's a firearm involved. Isn't that right, Mike?
Yeah, it's a whole different level than what it used to be. And you know, just the violence involved has upped itself. And the where we used to go to these fights, and they were fist fights, they were handled that way. And as you well know, back in high school, if there was somebody who had a beef against on somebody, they'd go out in the parking lot and it was taken care of. Now we've moved into an area where intimidation is a big deal. People, for whatever reason, feel like they need to carry illegal weapons. Most of these folks that do aren't legally licensed to do so. They have, very violent confrontations. Anytime there's an argument, a firearm comes out. And as we all well know, what the end result is. And it's become a problem that, and I'm not sure if it's a cultural thing, if it's something to do with the misunderstanding of how dangerous these things are and what the end result will be when you use them. I don't know, but it seems like a lot of these people live in another reality when it comes to the use of these firearms. And we all know what happens when you use them.
You know, I remember asking the question. It was a number of years ago. I've been doing this show for a very long time, obviously. But asking, you know, it was not unusual to have someone go through their entire career with never having to take their firearm out of the holster in an active role. That's a different world now, isn't it? Is it a different world? I guess the fact is you have to be prepared. Kevin Glendening, is it a different world now than it was?
Yeah, it's definitely transitioned. It's I don't know what the exact answer is, but there's always that concern when we go on these calls that there's firearms present, and by and large it's illegal firearms. It's not the law-abiding, gun-carrying public that are doing so legally, but there's always that concern, and there has been this transition, and I don't know if there's this infatuation with weapons, if it's these arguments about the video games and TV and what it's doing to kids, but I think that's a part of it, but there's also this there's this lack of they don't respect life like people used to.
Colin, we're going to get to you in a second. I want to get Dennis in here, though, because Dennis is – so how do you – when a call comes in, preparation, it's changed, hasn't it, from what you – or has it changed? Do you always have – you have to prepare for the worst. Is that a simple enough thing to say or –
Yeah, the training that we provide, I mean, we've ramped that up over the years. As the sheriff talked about it, it used to be just a regular bar fight. But as the training goes now, the Law Enforcement Academy has extended their training time so that they're prepared for those incidents from the beginning of their career on the way up through it. And plus, as a department, we've prepared as far as the different types of weapons. When I first started, it was a shotgun and I had a six shot revolver at that time. And now we've changed to we carry rifles and shotguns and have semi-automatic handguns. So a lot of things have changed for us when it comes to training. So we prepare for the worst usually and hope for the best when we go to those calls. And nobody wants to be involved in any of those situations when it comes to, you know, having to use their firearm. And like Sergeant Glendening said, you know, the respect for life nowadays has definitely changed, and we need to work at that on many fronts, not just on the criminal side, but as a community as a whole, the respect for life.
Jason Marlow, you've been a peace officer now with the Iowa State Patrol, I believe 22 years. Is that what I understand?
Yeah,
think
a little
that's
more
right.
than 22. That's right.
And over those 22 years, how have you seen things change, if they have changed, over 22 years ago from where they were to where they are?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I always try to point out in some of my presentations and the trainings that we received is we have a heightened awareness of pretty much anything that happens around Iowa or the country just because of the instant news and the amount of sources that are out there to provide that to us. You know, there's been things going on that involve firearms back since Wyatt Earp used to carry a badge. So you've got to kind of take some of that into perspective. I would agree with what Kevin said for sure. The awareness, the understanding of how precious life is. I don't know if it's there in everyone anymore, and certainly I'd echo what the sheriff and the chief said as well. From a law enforcement perspective, you just got to prepare for the worst and hope for the best. I think that's a good philosophy, and the good news is the vast majority of things that law enforcement is still involved in, from a response to a 911 call to a traffic stop, go unnoticed, and I think that's probably what we all want. We want a pretty uneventful shift when you go to work, no matter where you're working in our career field. So we continue to promote that awareness, the education, and you know, going forward, hope for the best.
There is no such thing as a routine stop anymore, is there?
Yeah, we try to stay away from that word. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't see the same thing maybe over and over in your career, even throughout that particular shift. But the word routine can sometimes get people in trouble, no matter what you're talking about.
So, how do you prepare? How do you prepare when you make a traffic stop? And is it Do you have a gut feeling that there might be something that's not right when you make a stop?
You know,
not?
I try to use the information that's available to me at the time. All of the awarenesses, the senses that everyone's blessed with. It's not just a law enforcement gut instinct. You know, if a farmer feels something's not right, you know, that's a human being thing.
Right.
But information about license plates, potential registered owners of the car, you're going to have that before you make that approach. I personally try not to make the same approach every single time the same way. Sometimes I may walk up on the driver's side. Sometimes it's the passenger side. Sometimes I stay between my patrol car and the car that I'm stopping. You know, don't get in a habit and that quote-unquote routine thing. And there's some benefits to that as well.
And here's the other thing, too, is we kind of miss a little bit of this, is that, you know, what I hear constantly with a lot of these problems is drug, alcohol, and depression that a lot of people are dealing with. And then the sense that they've lost all hope pushes them over the edge, and they do these things. They don't feel like they have any reason to live. They have no value of life. So in that regard, you know, when a law enforcement officer approaches them or they get in a situation like we've been in recently, it's like they feel like they have nothing to lose at their end of the rope. And that's something we have been doing better with that. But still, again, we've talked about this issue for the last several years. Our ability to get these folks in mental health counseling, get them in facilities, is still very difficult. And we have family members call us and say, hey, this guy has really got a problem. He's carrying a gun. He's acting out. He's doing these things. And that's helpful. We like to intervene and try to do what we can. And that's one thing I think is part of the key is family members got to stay involved. They have to notify the right authorities, and they got to get these people, you know, headed in the right direction one way or other.
All right. We've got, I believe, a caller waiting on line 3. Good morning on the talk show. Who do we have with us today joining the panel? Hello? Hold on. Ed, good morning today. Who do we have with us joining us today?
This is Randy.
Randy, what's on your mind?
Well, I think the biggest problem is these kids are thrown out on the streets to raise themselves. They got no religion, no conscience. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a conscience, who cares if you kill or rob or steal? Until they get religion back in the public schools and in the grade schools, this problem is going to go on forever.
Well, Randy, I think
no conscience.
Randy, I think you've made a really good point there. I'm not 100% sure that getting the church back into the school is the solution, but you're definitely right. Instilling some kind of moral compass into our youth is definitely a key component into solving, not all, but I'd say a good chunk of these types of violent crimes.
And getting
they're not going to do it themselves.
Getting a family involved is important too, isn't it?
What family?
That's what I'm saying. If you don't have a family, then you need to find help. And I don't know what you do. Mike, what do you do when you don't have a family?
Well, if a family's not going to do it, that's what I say. You know, we used to have it in the public schools. Make it mandatory one period for grade school kids to instill religion in them, to have a conscience.
Well, you can do that at a private school, but it's a very hard thing to do at a public school. You know what I mean?
That's right. I know. You got all the different
separation
efforts,
of church. Anyway. It's a separation of church and state, and that is an issue. But you know what? You bring up a good point. Moral compass, and what do you do to install something that it isn't there? Dennis, any ideas?
Yeah, some of the things that we talked about. We had a community forum last week, and some of those points come up, like family values. What are we doing to present these kind of values to our youth? How are we impacting the youth as a community, not just the police department, but as a community? What are we doing to make sure that they have these values if they're not given to them at home? And everybody's situation is different, and that's the first thing we need to understand. Not everybody comes from the family background of having mom and dad at home to look after them when they come home from school. And we have to understand that everybody comes from a different culture. And to get that understanding and preparing some of the places that the community lacks, or that people in the community lack that preparation for those life skills, is out there. And some of the positive things that are going on is the Bridges Out of Poverty offers a great solution and has over 65 graduates in there. And it sounds like a lot, but it's not really. When you talk about a community of 25,000 people here in Burlington itself, and we've only impacted 65 people. But it takes a lot of volunteers to make that program work, a lot of people that are helping with that program to reach out. And some of those success stories are really overwhelming when you do talk to them about where they come from, why they came into the program or how they came into the program and where they're at now, to change those values, how difficult it is, and the influences that are put upon them to when they're trying to get out of there, to stay into that poverty section of the community. The pressure that's on them is immense, and for them to get out of it is a feat in of itself, and understand how the world works and the values of the community overall versus just their individual values.
Randy, appreciate the call today. Thank you so much. And we're going to be taking a break. We've got news that's on the way. It's 9:39.
News now. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
News brought to you by Southeast Iowa Regional Airport and Air Choice One, making your travels easy, flying from Burlington to major Midwest hubs daily.
And now a look at today's headlines in the KBUR newsroom. I'm Colin Letty. The man accused of shooting at a group of people near Big Muddy's in Burlington pleaded not guilty Monday in a written arraignment. The Hawkeye reports that 24-year-old Chad Allen Sharkey of Stronghurst, Illinois, has been charged with attempted murder, 2 counts of willful injury causing serious injury, 1 count of willful injury causing bodily injury, and 1 count of intimidation with a firearm with the intent to injure or provoke. According to the Burlington Police Department, Sharkey shot his gun September 4th at a group of individuals who were at the parking lot outside of Big Muddy's. Sharkey allegedly injured 3 people, Blaine Buford, David Deegan, and Tyler Bezanine. Buford and Deegan both required medical attention. Sharkey is facing up to 25 years in prison for attempted murder, 10 years on each count of 2 counts of willful injury, causing serious injury and intimidation with a firearm with the intent to injure or provoke, and 5 years for willful injury causing bodily injury. In addition to the prison time, Sharkey could face a total fine of up to $37,500. A court date for Sharkey has not yet been set. Officials in a Des Moines suburb have approved plans for a warehouse and distribution center that would create more than 1,000 jobs. The company behind the project, to be located in an industrial area of Bondurant, is confidential. City Administrator Marquetta Oliver confirmed Wednesday the city council gave initial approval for the development called Project Blue Jay at its Monday meeting. Plans submitted to the city by contractor Ryan Companies appear to call for a 780,000-square-foot building of up to 5 stories high on just over 100 acres. The massive project appears to have more than 1,800 parking spaces around the building. There are plans for over 370 trees planted on the property. City officials agreed to help seek a state grant to help with up to $14 million in street improvements to improve truck access. The city says it will provide up to $8 million from tax increment financing for the project. The timeline has roadwork scheduled for next year and a project completion date of July of 2021. And those were today's headlines in the KBUR newsroom. I'm Colin Letty. For more stories, breaking news, and more, be sure to like us on Facebook or visit our website at kbur.com.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. President Trump on Twitter calls Adam Schiff a lowlife and says he should resign. Schiff chairs the House Intelligence Committee investigating a whistleblower complaint about the president.
A spokesman for Schiff acknowledges the whistleblower first came to the committee and was told to seek legal counsel and go to the inspector general. That led President Trump yesterday to accuse Schiff of authoring the complaint that launched the inquiry.
I think it's a scandal that he knew before. I'd go a step further. I think he probably helped write it.
There's no evidence that Schiff wrote any part of the whistleblower complaint.
Fox's John Decker at the White House. Another pro-democracy protest in Hong Kong today.
1,000 people gathering peacefully as locals remain angry about the shooting of an 18-year-old Tuesday, now in stable condition. He was charged with rioting and assault, which carries a 10-year jail sentence.
Fox's Greg Talcott in Hong Kong. America's listening to Fox News.
Live from Burlington in comfort with Southeast Iowa Regional Airport. And let Air Choice One make your travel easy and hassle-free with great daily connections to and from Chicago, St. Louis, Mason City, and Minneapolis. Free parking, short security lines with no overnight hotel stays to accommodate your connections. All make flying from Burlington on Air Choice One your smartest travel decision. Save time, stress, and money. Fly from Burlington. Book your flight today. Relax and enjoy traveling again.
Weather now. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
Look for cloudy skies continuing, then gradually expected to become mostly sunny this afternoon, a high to 62 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight, a low down to 44. Mostly sunny Friday, 63. Friday night, mostly cloudy, a low down to 53. And look for cloudy skies. Showers are 70% likely, mainly in the afternoon on Saturday. with a high to 66 right now. Skies continue cloudy, breezy northwest winds. It's 53 degrees.
I'm Jessica Ettinger, CNBC. Mixed and relatively flat markets to start the morning off on Wall Street. Investors are waiting for a key economic report coming in just a little while. It'll reveal whether the economic slowdown is spreading. We've got the Dow down 41 points. The Nasdaq is higher, up 2 points. The S&P just turned lower, down a point. The number of people who applied for unemployment benefits last week came in as expected. Tomorrow, we get the September jobs report from the Labor Department. Investors will certainly be watching that. Tesla shares lower this morning after its new car deliveries fell short. Bed Bath & Beyond's turnaround isn't happening fast enough for investors. Its shares are also lower this morning. Nearly half of consumers with airline and hotel rewards points let them expire. Bankrate says millennials are the most likely to lose those free flights or hotel nights. Repeating for you, the Dow, it's down 51 points. CNBC.
Are you a stock or options trader looking for real trading strategies that you can use immediately? Hi, my name is Scott Bauer, CEO of Prosper Trading Academy, and I'm on a mission to become the number one options coach in America. I'm a former vice president at Goldman Sachs. I have over 25 years of options trading experience, and right now, I'm giving away my most famous options guide with over 20 unique options strategies that I use every day for free. You can't buy this guide anywhere. To claim your free options trading guide, simply call 855-892-2307 now and mention my name, Scott Bauer, and we will rush you the guide. Call 855-892-2307 and someone from my options team will help you get this guide in your inbox as quickly as possible. Call 855-892-2307 now and start learning to trade the right way. Call 855-892-2307. 2307, prosper with options.
Stocks and options trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors.
Save big money on your fall home improvement projects now during Menards Oktoberfest sale. Find your style with Patriot Lighting. Add a rustic look to your home with the Handy Collection. It features a stainless black and gray faux wood finish. The Pendant Light is only $139.99. And the Island Light is just $169.99. Save on all of your projects during Menards Oktoberfest sale. Going on now through October 12th.
Save big money at Menards.
Start your day with KBUR.
The morning news. The
weather. Information you need to start your day.
Instant, up to date.
News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR. And online at KBUR.com.
Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come?
And welcome back on the Peace Officer Talk Show today. It is a Thursday. We got the Sheriff of Des Moines County, Mike Johnstone, joining us. We also have Sergeant Kevin Glendenning from the Des Moines County Sheriff's Office, the Chief of the Burlington Police Department, Dennis Kramer. We also have Jason Marlowe, Public Information Director for the Iowa State Patrol for our sector of the state. And, of course, Colin Letty is also across there, our News Director for News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBR. We have phone lines open at 754-1490. I did want to ask, there is an active shooter drill that is going to be taking place on Tuesday. And how many of you are involved in specifically in that? Is that the sheriff's office that's in charge of that, Mike, or what is it?
Our county maintenance director, Ronnie Bleasner, is in charge of it. Of course, we will be actively involved in it, as well as the city of Burlington. They'll be involved. Our dispatch center will be involved. Our firefighters, EMS, is going to be an all-inclusive deal. Everybody in the courthouse is going to be engaged in this thing. And we've done this one other time, but we're going to kind of ramp it up again. And I think it's basically what it is. It's a drill in the event that an active shooter would come into the courthouse. What do you do? How do you react? Who do you call? How we respond? And the reason we drill these things is because we'll make mistakes and we'll say, oh, there's a better way of doing it. And this is just a chance for everybody in the courthouse to kind of understand what might happen and how to react to it. So we're looking forward to it. And the courthouse will be closed, by the way. So we'll have people at the doors, and you won't be able to get in. So if you have any business on that day, do it early.
A shooter drill, does that mean you'll actually have somebody portraying the shooter entering in there to the...
We will. We will have someone in there. He'll be clearly marked as, you know, he's not actively shooting, but he will attempt to gain entry into certain offices. He may... I don't know if he's going to use an airsoft on that or not. But
will he actually be firing?
He could. He might be have like an air gun and
okay.
Those things are when we train we actually use airsoft guns, so we kind of understand what it feels like and in taking cover and those kind of things. So, but that'll be
a soft gun. What does that shoot? Is it
for those who aren't aware, airsoft guns are sort of a variant on paintball where instead of right. Paintballs, they shoot little 6mm plastic pellets.
Okay.
So they're air-powered pellet guns.
Okay.
So what we actually use are simmunitions. Yep. So it's it actually goes into the the actual duty weapons, the handguns and rifles that we carry, and they shoot a paintball round, but it's in the same cartridge as what is the duty weapon that we carry.
Okay, but if it actually hits somebody,
it's typically just a superficial wound, but it doesn't feel good.
Okay,
does that shoot at a much lower velocity than a normal round?
Sure, yeah, it's much lower, but it does leave a mark.
Okay, all right, so And I guess the thing to do, have you guys learned anything, Dennis Kramer and all of you? Is there anything you've learned over the years in terms of dealing with active shooters that's changed? I think that's probably the key question. Was I know that is it running? You know, it used to be run and hide, run as fast as you can and hide as fast as you can. Is that the best strategy for right now?
Well, as these events happen, like the sheriff said, we learn something from everything that we do. And when we do these drills, we learn something. When one event happens, we always talk about lessons learned. And it's very interesting for us in law enforcement to hear people that or agencies that are involved in an active shooter scenario, like a post-event, to talk about lessons they learned from it. And we learned something from it. So as these tactics have first came out in regards to an active shooter, what to do, they do change. But basically, if you can get out, get out. If you need to stay in place and protect yourself in place and barricade and prevent the shooter from getting to you. And that's the main objective here is to preserve your life. Either it's either exiting the building the quickest you can, and if you can't, you need to hide in place and make sure that you provide a safe environment and try to get information out to somebody that can come to you and help you. And when we come into that active shooter scenario, we're gonna basically search for that person that's the active shooter or shooters in that scenario, the very first thing, and then aid would come after that.
Okay, so but protecting yourself, I think we've heard before, hey, whatever you can throw at him, as many people as possible, throw, but we're the active shooter, her, I guess it could be too. Is that a possibility as well, or does that simply make you more of a target?
Well, there's a whole host of suggestions and things that you can do when it gets to a certain point. You just need to be prepared as a person in the community, being aware of your surroundings and where you're at, because it can happen anywhere. They're talking about the uptick in security as at the release of a movie, you know, and how the society has changed on the release of a movie. That's supposed to be a good movie, and the reality of it is people need to be aware of your surroundings wherever you're at. Look for those exits. Make sure you know, how can I get out of here? And that's with anything, not just an active shooter. If there's a fire, anything like that, that's a good suggestion.
All right, we're talking about anything to do with the active shooter drill. Is it actually, you actually got it scheduled for the
right.
Tuesday coming up, is
that
right?
That's correct, yes.
And as far as actually, but the courthouse is closed, but everybody else will be there. Is that right?
Yes, that is true. So,
how long does this drill last?
I believe we start at 2:00 is when we lock down the courthouse. So if you're, have any business, you make sure you get it done before then. And then we'll have our exercise, and then we'll have it, you know, like the chief says, we'll talk, have a debriefing afterwards and see how it went, you know, where, what we need to do differently. Do we need to add another layer of security? Do we need to have different people respond different places, or those kind of things? So we do the same thing in our schools. We have basically Mediapolis and Danville, we do the same things. So, and these are life lessons, and the chief mentioned that, is that these skills can be taken out in everyday life, and the event that they're at the grocery store or at wherever they might be, it could save their lives.
So it's designed as wherever you are, whatever you're doing, active shooters have been, I guess there's no place there hasn't been an active shooting in terms of types of places. They've been in stores. They've obviously, we had two days ago, we had the Las Vegas. Was it the shooting of the Las Vegas during the concert in Las Vegas? They read off the names on that.
2 years ago, October 1st.
Yeah, 2 years ago. Two days ago that they talked about it, though. They were the anniversary of it. But be aware, be prepared, and know what you can do, and know what you shouldn't do, and know what you should do, I guess, is probably all the things that are included in that. We're talking about shootings and active shooting, you know, and I guess really is it, and I guess that comes back to the whole concept, respect for firearms and understanding the fact that, hey, a gun is something that can kill you, and know what you can and can't do, and what you should or shouldn't do, and we've talked about that as well. We're talking about all of the things that are going into peace officers, law enforcement. One thing I did want to ask is that we have had in the past a lot of problems with school bus violations. I asked this last month. How have people been responding, and have you been writing tickets for school bus violations, either from the from a state standpoint or from a local standpoint? Jason?
Yeah, I think we've done a little bit better here, and that's a credit to the motoring public, just the general awareness of what the law says and what's to be expected. Now, we will continue to issue citations upon an investigation, and that investigation can be as simple as the school district providing the video footage from the exterior of the bus that clearly shows license plate, driver, and when the event occurred. So in the old days when I started, it was, hey, you had to look up the person, find the license plate, talk to the bus driver, read their report, try to figure out what went on. But video has made it a little bit easier from that standpoint.
What's the major – is the major thing illegal passing?
I'd say the biggest concern that I see is on a four-lane highway when people are following the bus in the same direction. And let's say, for instance, Highway 61 south of Burlington seems to be an area where we see a handful of bus violations. The bus is always going to be in the right-hand lane for pickups and drop-offs. That leaves that left-hand lane open, and when someone is following it, they realize, okay, the bus is about to make a stop. I don't have the extra few seconds or minutes to wait here, and they go ahead and pass it on the yellow lights, and that is a violation. I think most people know that passing a school bus with the red lights flashing and the stop arm out is a violation.
Ah.
But the biggest one is the fact when you're following that bus on the four lane, the same would be true of a two lane highway as well, but you don't seem to notice or see as many violations.
It's not like a stop sign or a stop light where it's green means go,
right.
Red means stop, and yellow means floor it, right?
Well, there is that philosophy, which is one we don't often encourage, but thanks for pointing that out, Steve. And I tell people, if you look at the back of any school bus in Iowa, it's going to say something to the wording of illegal to pass when lights flash, wording of that sort. So really what they're talking about is the yellow lights, which is the first set of lights that bus driver is going to activate, letting the motoring public know that we're going to make a stop
here. So you're
going
to have to stop behind me.
If you're following the bus and those yellow lights come on, you cannot overtake it in the same direction. That is a bus violation.
I believe that bus driver is required to signal, I think it's 300 to 500 feet, and zones 45 miles per hour or greater. So there's a significant distance, but they're doing that for a reason. They're giving the warning that they're going to stop.
They're going to tell the people behind them that you better slow down.
So sure, and that's not a warning to, hey, get around me in a hurry, which might have been looked at it that way. But I would say the same as Jason is locally, we've seen these bus violations go down. Just the reported violations, we haven't had the major issues that we've had. So hopefully that's because we've educated the public and they become aware of these issues, and we haven't had those issues like we've seen in the past.
There's cameras everywhere, and speed cameras are a very popular thing in some places. We have no speed cameras here, do we?
No, we do not.
And is there any intention to put speed cameras in any place?
No, sir.
Okay, and is that because of, is there a reason? I know Cedar Rapids has them, and I know that there are some places up Muscatine, they've got them, I know that. Is there a reason why you wouldn't do something like that, Dennis?
There's some stipulations that have to come with those speed cameras when you talk about the safety of the traffic. If you can show a concern that speed is a problem, and this is the best way to affect enforcement in that zone, I think they would be ideal. I think where it got off track with some areas is it was like an opportunity to increase funding, and it got off track a little bit like that. But I think now it's more in check. You have to show that, you know, this is a major concern in this area, and it does allow for those speed cameras to be put in place to infect the speed of that zone.
All right, gentlemen, we want to thank our panelists today. Mike Johnstone, the Sheriff of Des Moines County, Sergeant Kevin Glendenning from the Des Moines County Sheriff's Office, also Dennis Kramer, the Chief of the Burlington Police Department, and Jason Marlowe. Gentlemen, officers, peace officers, we've got another one the first Thursday in the month of November. All of that is coming up. Thank you all for joining me, and Colin Letty, thank you as well.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
All right.